the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. Episode 507, one of our off-season shows with me is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. I'm going to keep plugging, especially this time of year, the season's over. Get on that podcast. Get all the old, you know, get back on the previous episodes on this content leading up to the draft. You will be well-educated. But Seth, we are, you know, there's the playoffs. I wrote a whole bunch of stuff about the playoffs and nothing about the Cardinals other than, you know, just general NFL stuff. Who are the former Cardinals on the rosters? Who were some pending free agents who could be targets for the Cardinals? Blah, 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 blah. But yeah, interesting wild card weekend. Sorry if you follow my picks for football. Normally, I'm pretty decent good with my winning and spread picks on NFL games and in years past. In fact, my playoff performance has outdone my regular season performance, and I pulled an over on all six of my spread picks this weekend. It was almost like, aside from the Packers winning and beating Dallas, it was all chalk. They were the only ones that won on the road. And cue all the jokes about the Cowboys and the playoffs. But, I mean, we want to react in this show. And what did you learn about what happened over the weekend based on what we saw?
You know, I think the first thing you've learned is that it's the NFL window to be a Super Bowl team is incredibly small unless you have a Hall of Fame level quarterback. And that's not to take shots at any of the guys that, you know, were involved this weekend, but like Joe Flacco, Tua Tagovailoa, Dak Prescott, you know, whatever happened with the Steelers, and Jalen Hurts, like none of those guys are Hall of Famers. I didn't mention Matthew Stafford. He's probably a Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, that's a debate we can have another day, but I think he's fairly close to being a Hall of Fame quarterback. Right. And let's be honest, he kept the Rams in the game. He gave him a shot to win that game.
Yeah.
And so, unless you have a guy named Patrick Mahomes, or at this point, it looks like Josh Allen, and I think we couldn't be getting close, pretty close to discussing Lamar Jackson, and not saying that they're locks for the Hall of Fame or anything like that, but they're consistent yearly MVP candidates, right?
Yes.
Unless you have at least those two and maybe the third, you have to have a balanced team and a quarterback playing at an extremely high level. And those two things are what dictate success in the NFL year by year or whatnot. And that's where we're at right now, kind of looking at the teams that are left, right? I mean, the Houston Texans have perhaps the hottest, best quarterback in the NFL right now. The Kansas City Chiefs obviously have Patrick Mahomes, and they're playing, and they have the best defense they've had in the Andy Reid era. The Green Bay Packers, there might not, I mean, the only quarterback that is playing at the same level as Stroud is Jordan Love, right? Like, at this time, the last six weeks of the season. Detroit Lions, very balanced team, excellent offense, decent defense, a lot of weapons. The Bills, obviously, with Allen. And then the Bucks, I think they just – I don't think that they're a true contender. I think that they're, you know, playing with house money, so to speak. But overall, I mean,
when you barely win the NFC South.
Right. Right. And let's be honest, that we all kind of saw this coming with the Eagles. Like, we thought they'd have a little more fight than what they showed. But, like, that outcome was not a surprise.
You know, honestly, and I wrote about it today, recording on a Tuesday night. Cardinals fans, now we can relish in that, because if we're longtime Cardinals fans, you really feel nothing towards any NFC East team. Eagles are a team I strongly dislike. I don't think I might say that I even dislike the Eagles more than I dislike the Cowboys, and that's saying something. Though I will say I did have a window of time when I was a Cowboys sympathizer, because I was a huge Tony Romo fan and wished to everything that somehow the Cardinals could have gotten him. But that's beside the point. But, you know, the Eagles, if you look at their collapse this year, that felt just like the Cardinals' 2021 season. They, you know, there are a lot of parallels to that. They're, obviously, the backstory is different. Philadelphia nearly won the Super Bowl last year. But this year, you know, the Cardinals went into 2021. They were rolling 9-2, 10-2. Then they lose 4 or 5 down the stretch. They looked terrible. The offense looked bad. The defense was suddenly terrible. Like, once Robert Alford and J.J. Watt got hurt, they couldn't stop anyone. They gave up over 28 points a game over their last 5 games. Then they got smoked in the first round by the Rams. It was an embarrassment by everyone. Guess what? Philly just did the same thing. They were 10-1. They lost 5 out of their last 6 games in the regular season, giving up over 30 points a game in that spread, and then got smoked by Baker Mayfield. And the, at least in the Cardinals' sense, the Cardinals got smoked by the eventual world champions. Unless,
yeah, we don't see that happening.
We don't see that happen with Tampa Bay. And I'm, of all the NFC teams, that is the team I like the most, because I love Baker Mayfield. I loved him coming out of college, and I'm glad that he's found his way in Tampa, both performance and swagger. That's the fun Baker Mayfield. It's a fun quarterback to watch, and to do it with that particular roster is fun to see. But good for Todd Bowles, but still, the Eagles are going through. And here's the thing. The Cardinals couldn't stop the bleeding heading into last year, which is what led to. Now, people wanted to, like, it, and we talked about it on the show. I mean, they wanted to, you know, people were saying, fire Kingsbury. They got their extensions. And we understand why they got their extensions that looked bad, but it's not like you could fire them. Like, you could, but considering their history, you couldn't fire them after they won 11 games and made the first playoffs for the first time in 7 years. That's exactly what you wanted them to do. But they couldn't stop the bleeding. 2022 happened. They couldn't get out of their own way. And ultimately, it led to that disaster, led to the firings and everything else. And so Philly is going to have to find a way to stop that bleeding. The difference is they had great success leading up to this year, and then things just got out of sorts. They, you know, Darius Slay got hurt. They changed defensive play callers. It felt like, and they were talking about it on the broadcast, it was almost like they were, like Sirianni made a panic move.
Yeah, they were just searching for an answer that wasn't around.
And this is part of why there is so much vitriol towards Jonathan Gannon. But look, Jonathan Gannon took that same defense, and they were fantastic. Yes, they had a bad Super Bowl against, you know, Patrick Mahomes, but as we see year in and year out, every defense seems to have trouble with Patrick Mahomes. And I know I was telling you off the air is that, you know, sure, Jonathan Gannon he actually probably doesn't feel vindicated, because those coaches on that staff, for the most part, are his close friends. And so I'm sure he was rooting for Philadelphia. Since the Cardinals weren't in it, He was rooting for Nick Sirianni, and to see his former players and his former colleagues go out like that, that had to be rough. So I don't think he's taking any victory out of that, even though reputation wise, you can see, hey, Gannon wasn't the problem.
No, and that was the thing, is like, I wanna take shots at these guys, but you know,
Eagles fans are kind of awful.
Yeah, but not just their fans, man. It's crazy. That's I expect it from fans. They're uneducated. They're, you know, obviously the old cliche, it's short for fanatics for a reason, you know, everything.
They
but like
Santa Claus.
Yeah, like I can accept it from them. It's kind of crazy to me how vindictive and petty their media is.
That doesn't make sense at all. That really doesn't to me.
Yeah, and it's crazy to me. you know, they want to take shots at Gannon because of certain aspects that happened or things that happened, right? Like, and it's like, no, man, like, that's not where it needs to be. And so we'll see, man. I am of the opinion that this is a, you know, it all comes out in the wash usually. And I'm comfortable with how that all came out and what happened. And, you know, like you said, he's probably not feeling vindicated, but I think it was, you know, a lot of it was just unfortunate that it all got placed on one guy in one situation.
Yeah, that was useless. So the Cardinals continue to have a little bit of bad luck with there. And my goodness, so say what you will, Nick Caserio, genius, right?
Yeah, right.
Nick Caserio, the genius. He trades next year's first to get himself Will Anderson. And then what is that first round pick going to be? It's now in the 20s. The Texans, they roll over the Browns 45-14. I expected the Browns to win, but I don't know. Like, the way CJ Stroud plays, how do you pick against him right now?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy to me that they were home dogs in that one. I know that the Browns, and you and I both picked the Browns, so it wasn't like we weren't gonna pick the Browns, but it was just the disrespect to what the Texans had done was kind of crazy to me, you know. And you look at it, and CJ Stroud was good, so I don't want to take anything away from, but it's not like he was like otherworldly, right?
No,
like, it wasn't,
but he's
like,
but
like,
you watch him play, he plays with ease.
Yeah, with a calmness and everything. And I mean, you just look at it, he had a great game, you know, 274 yards, 3 touchdowns. They were just able to really control things on against the Browns defense that's supposed to be the best in the, you know,
yeah,
NFL. Well,
and honestly, it came down to this. The Joe Flacco pick sixes in the third quarter did it. Cuz, you know, they came into the third quarter, they were down by 10. They score on that first possession, it's a one-score game, completely different. But you go pick six, and then a couple plays later, pick six, that game was over. And so all the magic that Flacco had, yeah, that was a bummer. That was a bummer. Because then, you know, for those, say, hey, guys, who, if you think that the NFL is scripted, the script would have had Flacco and the Browns playing the Ravens this week.
Right, 100%.
That was the script, guys. So either CJ Stroud said F the script. those games were, I mean, really, they were pretty non-competitive. The Lions-Rams game, competitive. The Steelers-Buffalo game pretended to be competitive, but the rest of them were not competitive because Kansas City, Miami could do nothing. Miami could do nothing, and like it's just unfair. Miami's always like Miami will never ever play well in the cold. It's you can't play in Miami and be a good cold weather team. It's just right. I don't think it's possible. They're 1-12 on third down, 264 total yards. They were hapless. And Mahomes was solid. They you know, he had the touchdown pass. He had the rush for 28 yards. Isaiah Pacheco looked fantastic. But, I mean, he looked fantastic, and yet only averaged 3.7 yards per carry. But they and like you said, this is the best defense that Mahomes has had. And that's saying something, which has been they're having to play differently because
– Well, and isn't this week, and I know we're not previewing the games, but isn't this week like
this is kind of like the Super Bowl, right?
Well, I was going to say, and doesn't this just have the feeling of like the old Patriots Colts stuff?
Yes.
Like and the Bills were the Colts and the Chiefs were the Patriots, and you're just like, "Oh, can they do it? They can't do it, right?" Like,
"Oh, now they're going to play in Buffalo this time. It's not
right,
going to matter."
Right. And you're like, "You still can't take Buffalo, right? You still can't take." But yeah, I mean, yeah, you said it. The Chiefs just physically and dominated every aspect of that game. It was baffling to see how, and we knew that they would be overwhelmed, but it was just baffling to see how bad they were. I mean, this was 409 yards, 264 yards, you know, only the one turnover, but it never seemed like it was a close game. And they're just, you know, the Dolphins are frauds, and that's
it's too bad. They were so decimated by injuries. It was so bad.
Well, and it's just one of those things. And you and I were talking about it off the air. Like this is one of those situations where you just look at it and you go, where do you go with this information? Like where, and to me, you look at this and you go, okay, you can't expect this team or these teams with these quarterbacks that are flawed like this. Like if they're not playing at an elite and even Flacco was playing at a super high level. Right. But it's almost like in every single one of these games, the better quarterback won. And not necessarily the better career or this or that, but like the guy playing better at this moment won. And that's just, you know, that's just the way the NFL kind of works. You know, the NCAA tournament, right? Like a lot of times it's the team with the best guards that end up winning, right? Like the guys that have and those guys get hot and carry a team. That kind of feels like what's happening with the NFL. Like it again, I think you and I are not expecting much in the way of like upsets. Like we're not expecting a Tampa Houston Super Bowl, right? Like
no.
Like we're not expecting that. But we do expect that this team or these teams will be competitive still. And it wouldn't be surprising to see the Texans flirt with beating the Ravens, right?
Right.
Like, and that's kind of what we're talking about is like when you walked into this weekend, there were two certainties, the Chiefs were winning, the Bills were winning. Those were the two certainties, right? And that goes back to the like Mahomes and Allen thing. And then the other things were all kind of like, I think I'm not, you know, depends type of stuff. And like, neither you or I would have called, you know, the Texans or the Packers winning.
My God. I have no idea what happened with Dallas.
But neither of us were surprised to see. Neither of us were surprised to see the Texans or the Packers win. Now, again, how they won, completely different. We 1,000% are going to be like, no, that was shocking.
What the heck, the Packers? How is it possible to have three quarterbacks in a row? Like you go from Brett Favre who, granted, one of the greatest, also one of the craziest, to Aaron Rodgers, one of the best ever, to now Jordan Love, who
looks really good.
What the heck? Three touchdown passes. And the part that was tough is that what happened to Dallas's defense?
Right.
Green Bay did, they were outgained by all the 100 yards because Dallas had over 500 yards. But, Aaron Jones, they couldn't stop Aaron Jones.
Right.
Jordan Love.
It was that fake yardage at the end of the game.
Yes, it was fake. It was totally fake. Now, granted, it came down to turnovers, but they were up four. They were up four scores in the second quarter. There was basically no coming back. And they needed Dak to be perfect. Doesn't it feel like Dak Prescott has hit Tony Romo level?
Right.
Tony Romo built teams like that, except for Dak's rookie year. Here's the thing. Tony Romo, they built those teams for the Dallas when Tony Romo was starting like the Colts built their teams for Peyton Manning. The problem was Tony Romo wasn't Peyton Manning, and so he would make a mistake or two, and that wasn't good enough. The one year they are set up for Tony to thrive, he hurts his back, and then Dak takes over his rookie year.
Well, and the thing that you look at, and the biggest thing that you take from all of this, man, is it's crazy to say this. Look at Dak's season, 4,500 yards, just under 70% completion percentage, 36 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And people are like, you got to get rid of him. Like, you got to move on. And
the
so
turnovers
that's
that, came back. I'm like, I don't know. Like, this is a classic case of like, if your guy's not a Hall of Fame quarterback, you've got to have the team around him. And it ultimately, those turnovers and the defense did nothing. That defense, Micah Parsons, stoned. Nothing. Odigizua, nothing. DeMarcus Lawrence, nothing. They had nothing. They didn't create any turnovers. They didn't get the quarterback. Jordan Love, he does some Aaron Rodgers-like things. Like, obviously not the same level, but the way he plays the game, and I'm sure what he learned from Aaron Rodgers, you watch there every once in a while, you're like, what the heck is a quarterback from Utah State doing that?
Yeah, but it goes back to what, I was tweeting and you and I were texting during the game. It's like, I haven't seen a defense play this bad all season. And we watched every Arizona Cardinals game. Like, what were the Cowboys doing defensively? I mean, it was legitimately tough to watch. And to your point, like, when you get a complete no-show from your – I mean, they had three quarterback hits, Jess. Three. In the game. And so you just look at it like, this was the weekend that kind of defined what I've been saying all along. Like, you move on from Kyler, that's fine. Like, do that, that's fine. But, like,
It won't matter unless you build the team around him.
Unless you get, and we can't put Stroud in that, but unless you get a Mahomes or an Allen, it won't matter. And so you're just going to rob Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, every single time you do this. And so you might have flashes, you might have upticks. And then, Kyler's going to go to Miami, replace Tua, and throw for 5,200 yards and 45 touchdowns. And get knocked out in the second round if they have the same type of injuries and issues and things like that. And guess what? People are going to go, oh, we should have kept that guy. And so, like, that's just the thing, man. Like you said, the grass is always greener, but it's not necessarily really green. A lot of times it's just turf or it's painted or it's not truly there, and that's just the reality of it. It's tough, and everybody wants to be excited and get something new and shiny, but man, that's just not how this works. And for now, will look at this weekend and say, like, if you want to win, you got to build like, you got to build like the Packers, the Lions, you know, and those teams. Yeah.
49ers.
You need to build that unless you are convinced that there's a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen in this draft.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Still not terribly Cardinal-centric. We're going to talk about, because, you know, we've got a couple of weeks. We got League Awards coming. We have the All-Pro all came out. League Awards coming. We'll give our big awards. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Time to talk about season awards. We gave our Cardinals awards last week in our second show on Thursday that you guys heard late in the week. We gave grades, we gave our awards and recognitions. All pro teams came out, nothing surprising about that. No Cardinals on any all pro team, but that's not what we're here for. We want big, we're talking MVP, offensive, defensive player of the year, coach of the year, rookies of the year, comeback players of the year, those guys. Let's make the case for what we got. For the MVP, is it safe to say that with his play in the last few games that it sealed it for Lamar Jackson? Because I don't think you can give it to anyone else. His statistical year was fantastic. When he went head to head against Brock Purdy, it was head and shoulders above. Tyreek Hill didn't reach the pinnacle, like the super milestone that he would have needed. You can make a case for Christian McCaffrey, but as good as his year was, it wasn't as special a year as I'd say that Jackson's year was.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Lamar. The only other guy I would entertain is Josh Allen. You know, he led the league in touchdowns, total touchdowns, but he also led the league in total turnovers. I mean, his play is incredibly high variance, but he's just such a game changer for them overall that, like, it's hard not to look at him and compliment him in that way.
I think if I had an MVP vote, and I believe they do first, second, third place, 5-3-1, I think at the point where it goes, I would vote a ballot Lamar, Allen, and then McCaffrey, I think.
Yeah, I would actually agree. I think that I'd have the same exact order.
Then would that mean McCaffrey gets he wouldn't get it because he gets some recognition for it.
Right.
Offensive player of the year. This one, you've got a couple of guys, obviously. You could go with Tyreek. You could go with McCaffrey. Who's your particular pick?
Man, I wanted to give it to Tyreek, but I think I got to give it to McCaffrey.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, it's his year was
just so good, man.
Oh my gosh, we thought we'd seen the best from Christian McCaffrey before. Like he did have the 1,000 year that we thought David Johnson was going to get. He had that a couple of years ago. He led the NFL in rushing over 1,450. He had 14 touchdowns. He's caught 67 passes for over 500 yards. So he cleared 2,000 yards from scrimmage for the second time in his career. I don't think he had 21 total touchdowns. He was in an offense that was tailor-made for a guy like him. And he even, and that's the thing, as good as San Francisco's offensive scheme is for the run game, Christian McCaffrey took it to another level. He missed a game and still averaged, he still had over 1,400 yards. Now, he did not average the most rushing yards per game. I can't remember who it was that did. But 91 yards a game and to have over 2,000. Like, Tyreek was close, but also, you know, we've seen, like, McCaffrey's year for a running back was still better than Tyreek's as a receiver, I think.
Take a shot. We knew that. Yeah, it was. And it was such a good, season. And he's just such a just dynamic playmaker. And, you know, it's one of those things that you just watch him play, and it's just, it sucks that he's with the 49ers, but it was just so, he's so fun to watch play.
Yeah.
And same thing with Tyreek, right? Like, those guys are just unique. Let me ask you this. Because, you know, typically, like you said, the MVP ends up being one thing, and then the offensive player of the year ends up being another thing. Because it's crazy to think. James Conner finished sixth in rushing this year. So does what McCaffrey did this year from a rushing standpoint, and then obviously what he does in the receiving game too, is that why we're looking? Because like you said, from a statistical output, just over 2,000 yards from scrimmage, 21 touchdowns. It's a great season, but it's not like it's a historic season, right?
Yeah.
But do we look at it through a different lens now because of how devalued and how little involved or how little product? I mean, McCaffrey didn't play the final game and was still 300 yards clear of his next closest guy. And so here's the other stat that's mind-blowing to me. Mind-blowing. He leads the league in first downs rushing with 83. The next closest guy is Jalen Hurts with 68. But the next closest runner is Derrick Henry with 63. Just that is just baffling to me how dominant his season was. But I mean, you go back even, 2 years, 3 years? I mean, your rushing leader was over 1,600 yards. You had three guys clear of what he had this year, just last year. In 2021, you had Jonathan Taylor over 18. Like, and I'm not taking anything away from McCaffrey, but is it, and obviously Derrick Henry 4 years ago, over 2,000 yards, right? Is it just as simple as that? Like, because the rushing game is so devalued now that a season like McCaffrey had, with his numbers being so much better than the next closest guys, that it just kind of skews in that way?
You know, it might be true. And yeah, especially it's adding that 17th game to the season, I think made things a little bit harder for running backs. Teams are more likely to use a committee with running backs. And the passing game is just still is king. But even still, I don't know. Yeah, you might have swayed me to Tyreek again.
and that's why I was curious, because I think it's Christian. I'm not trying to sway you. I think it's Christian McCaffrey, but I'm just thinking aloud, like, just in where we are. And I mean, you look at
the Suns just won. How'd they win?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
32-8 run in the fourth quarter.
What?
But you look at Tyreek, I mean, we'll just call it 1,800 yards, 1,799, 1,800, whatever. But like, CeeDee Lamb had 50 less yards. Amon-Ra St. Brown had, less than, had over 1,500 yards. Puka Nacua had over 14, just under 1,500 yards. Like, the numbers that we're seeing from 1 to 18, sorry, 18 in the receiving aspect of things is so much greater than 1 to 6 in the rushing aspect that I think we overcompensate. You get what I'm saying? Like, oh,
yeah, Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, and again, it is McCaffrey for me, but like if it goes to Tyreek, I would understand it.
Yeah. Defensive player of the year. I don't know which way to go with this, because which is more impressive? TJ Watt's incredible year. And TJ Watt led the league in sacks with 19. But it's not just that, because he had four forced fumbles. He had 36 quarterback hits, 19 tackles for losses. He had an interception. He broke up 8 passes. He recovered 3 fumbles and even scored once. His impact, and basically, when Watt doesn't play, the Steelers are not good. But at the same time, Deron Bland, 9 interceptions, 5 touchdowns. I don't know which way I want to go, because sacks, yes, but that many interceptions and returns for touchdowns is really, really, really hard to ignore. And then you have to look at other things. Is he also, you know, with the interceptions, Deron Bland, his, you know, Pro Football Reference, the passer rating allowed when targeted, you know, 60.8. That, I mean, that comes from, you know, having all those touchdowns, of course. But he allowed under 60% of passes to be completed his way, 13 yards per completion. I don't know where that ranks among players, but sometimes it feels like, to me, and it's easier to ignore interceptions in my mind, because you can have lots of interceptions, not because you're a great player, right?
Right. You can be in the right spot.
Just happen to be there.
Yeah. I think his passes defense, kind of what you're saying, you know, helps him out a lot, because those are making plays on the ball, right?
Yes.
So those are true. I mean, it's something that Justin and I talk about all the time, in that, like, you want a guy that gets his hand on at least one ball a game. That makes it really easy to kind of quantify his ability to make plays on the ball. You know, so I get that portion of it, but I just think that, and obviously doing this now makes it a little easier in hindsight, but I just think that when you look at the fact that how much worse the Pittsburgh defense is without TJ Watt, you just kind of look at it and you go, man, he is the defensive MVP, because they literally can't function without him.
Well, and you take another aspect of this, is that why is Deron Bland able to do what he does?
Yeah, because of Micah Parsons. And
because of the pass rush that they have. And
well, and even not even that. I mean, yes, that is a huge, huge part of it. So I shouldn't have said it that way. But not just that. The fact that you have Stephon Gilmore on the other side. And so who are you going to attack, right? Like, who would you attack more in that situation, Stephon Gilmore or Deron Bland?
Yeah, makes sense. I would lean Watt, but I mean, he's just an animal. Like, he's led the NFL in sacks in 3 of the last 4 years. He had 15, 22 and a half. The only reason he didn't have more last year, coming back off the injury. 5.5 last year, 19 this year. He now has 96.5 for his career, and that career began in 2017, and he's not slowing down. He's something else. He is something else. Offensive rookie of the year. I know who's going to win it. I know it's C.J. Stroud, and this is like we can got to go back to Kyler's year. You know, Kyler had really good numbers, had some really notable records, rookie records, but Josh Jacobs probably had the better season, but it was clearly Kyler Murray, and it was always going to be Kyler Murray. Here you have C.J. Stroud, looking like already a star. But then you get Puka Nacua setting rookie records as a fifth-round receiver.
Yeah, and that's where I struggle because I really think it should be Nacua. I know what Stroud did. I know what he's earned. I know how good he looks, and he should be a legit MVP candidate. But what Nacua did is unheard of. Like, literally unheard of.
But who's going to be the offensive? It's definitely going to be Stroud. I think it's probably going to be Stroud in a landslide. Puka's season was so good. And this is a guy, I liked Nacua coming out of college. There's literally no one could have predicted something like this. I knew how good he was at BYU. I do watch a little bit of BYU football because, you know, my son-in-law watches BYU football, and so I like to keep up with that. My daughter watches BYU football, and so that's why I watch. And I've seen some of the guys. So, like, Tyler Allgeier, like, I liked him. I thought he would be a good pro. Puka Nacua, I think he'd be an underrated pro, to see how absolutely fantastic he is. And I think part of that is that he fell into the perfect offense. He fell into perfect offense to succeed. Had the perfect opportunity to shine when Cooper Kupp was hurt. I'd like to pick Puka for the award, but you can't ignore CJ Stroud, and it comes down to that quarterback position every single time.
Yeah, it's always going to win that, and that's unfortunate that that's how it works out. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't fault it. I would give it to Nacua, and like you said, I think Stroud's going to win.
That makes sense. Defensive Rookie of the Year, who is your pick?
I can tell you who it's not. I don't think I truly don't think Jalen Carter deserves it. I think he's probably going to end up winning it just from a popularity standpoint. But when you look at this draft, and I was talking about this on our podcast last night, when you look at this draft, there were a bevy of other defensive players that were better than him. I think Will Anderson deserves it. That's who I would start with. But the next guy that I would look at would be Byron Young out of LA. Because, I mean, this guy finished with 8 sacks. He led all rookies in sacks Kobe Turner.
That, you know, think of a guy who you never thought would be in the mix. But, yeah, Kobe Turner, interior lineman, drafted in the 3rd round. 9 sacks for the Rams.
And then, I mean, Byron Young had 8, and he had a great season overall. I mean, he looked really good. You know, and that's – I think overall you end up – it's – I think it's going to go to Will Anderson, and I don't have a problem with that. I think he's had a very good season. I think he's, you know, been one of the better defensive players. And then down the stretch, he had a really nice, you know, he had a nice finish to the season. He was kind of slow starting. He's kind of the opposite of Jalen Carter, right?
Yeah.
You look at it from the Cardinals game on, he had 6 sacks. He had 2 sacks before that. On the season. So, like, when you look at it, you know, it's just one of those situations that he just improved weekly, got better, and kind of came on at the end as he grew into the position. You know, Jalen Carter, on the flip side, you look at his season, he had a real fast start to the season, and he finished with 2 sacks in his final 10 games. And so, or 8 games, sorry.
Now, Anderson and Turner both benefited from the guys on their team. Obviously, Will Anderson benefited by Jonathan Grenard being on the team. Kobe Turner benefited by playing right next to Aaron Donald, which does make it like you have to pay attention to Aaron Donald. So, Kobe Turner, if you got any juice at all, you're going to be able to make plays. But 9 sacks is a lot. I think this is the more intriguing one because you can make a case for any of those guys. you can make a case for Will Anderson. Like, Will Anderson is probably the favorite. Jalen Carter. But then you Byron Young, like you mentioned, and Kobe Turner. Like, you can make a case for any of those guys, especially in terms of the pass rushing production. What about Devin Witherspoon?
Yeah, he had a really good season. He showed to be a very talented and very good defensive player. I think he would be, you know, up there amongst the best in terms of overall
play.
He made a Pro Bowl
as a rookie. So that's another one. Now, comeback player of the year. This is always a weird one. Like, you get like Geno Smith, who won it last year. He didn't really come back from anything other than, you know, not
being
playing.
Bad. Yeah.
But you've got Joe Flacco for his end of the season comeback, but it was, you know, a few games. You've got the, of course, DeMar Hamlin, who died and came back to play. But then you've also got Baker Mayfield. Like, you think Hamlin's going to be? Do you think it's his? And here's the thing: he only played in 5 games this year, but that's still a great. Like, the fact he's playing football, he's alive. I think at the beginning of the year, that's what we thought it would be, but isn't. I know they're talking about that on the broadcast on Monday night, but doesn't it feel like Baker Mayfield's probably that guy this year?
Yeah, it does. And so it's either got to be Baker or, you know, if people got in before Flacco. I mean, that's really the only two guys that make sense for me. I get the nostalgia, or not nostalgia, but like the enjoyment or the thought of DeMar Hamlin, but I mean,
that is the greatest comeback,
right? To be alive, right?
but he like, played in 5 games and a total of 111 snaps for the entire season.
Yeah, and only 17 on defense, 94 on special teams. I mean, and that's not to take anything away from him. I mean, that's great, but it's not like he came back and played his role
right
that he was in.
It wasn't Alex Smith who came back from a mangled leg and played at a high level.
Right.
It wasn't like even last year, the Geno Smith, it makes sense that he came back because he was, you know, came back from not being a starter to being a really good starter. Then, you know, went back to kind of normal starter. But I like the Baker pick because he did have to overcome a lot. He went from that really good year in Cleveland to being not very good to being unwanted to getting some garbage time playing time last season for the Rams, and then happening to be just the perfect fit for what Tampa needed, in the sense that they had no money. And so they got the most talented quarterback that would take that much money, who had, like, you have to kind of look at probably the fewest flaws in their game. Like, you could have gone out and got a Sam Darnold, but Sam Darnold, guys.
Yeah.
You could have gone out and gotten Carson Wentz. But again, Carson Wentz is Carson Wentz. And Baker, you saw it was a perfect fit, and his swagger's back. The weapons that he had in Tampa with Mike Evans and Curtis Godwin and Rashad White playing so well this year, and a defense coached by Todd Bowles. I think that's a good pick. I think that's a solid pick there with Baker. Who's your best coach this year? There, I mean, you could go.
It sucks because it was Stefanski until he blew it. That's the hard part about doing it tonight as opposed to last week is that,
well, you know, I still, you know, I really like even Stefanski, like what he did with the quarterbacks that he had this year. I still really like what D'Amico Ryans did.
Right.
As a rookie head coach, because the coach of the year, is always someone that exceeds expectations, right? Like, if you have, like, it's really hard for Andy Reid to win Coach of the Year now because you expect them to be great. And so you take, like, did did you expect something and were they even better? You know, Nick Sirianni a year ago, you make the case for that. Cliff Kingsbury in 2021, if it weren't for the collapse. It's if they outperform what they expect. This Texans team was expected to be as bad or awful. Worse as the Cardinals. You know, we were thinking, like, literally we were talking about having the first and second picks in the draft. D'Amico Ryans leads this team to a division title. And that's not even that. Even before winning the playoff game, I still, like, my personal favorite is D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair, you know, that's a fair one. I would have gone Stefanski. I think Ryans is going to win it, so you know it makes sense. But I think it was going to be, you know, I wouldn't blame anybody for either pick, right? But yeah, I think it's going to be Ryans. I would have taken Stefanski, but the shine wore off. But you know, we'll see what the voters think. Because I mean, what he did without the quarterback situation and then without Nick Chubb is just so hard to look at and explain, right?
Yeah, I will give you absolutely that. You know, Deshaun Watson done, Nick Chubb done, and to have to come back from that, coming up next on Rise Up.
Let me ask you something real quick. Do we not, and I mean, I know they lost and they looked ugly doing it, but do we overlook what Mike Tomlin does year in and year out?
Yes, we do, but it's not severely exceeding expectations. And that's what it comes down to with Coach of the Year.
A lot of it is his own fault because he set the expectations so high.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's the same thing. Otherwise, you could have said Belichick was probably Coach of the Year most of the years. But Andy Reid could be Coach of the Year almost every year. But like you either have to have the very best team, I think, like hands down, like far and away, where you are leading a team that is just mowing people down, and in which case you could always look at Shanahan. But it usually goes to someone whose team outperformed expectations, in my opinion.
No, and I think it's fair. I was just curious because I love to get the gauge on what people think of him overall as a coach, because I feel like he is severely underrated for everything that he does consistently year in and year out.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Syrup podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We get into Cardinals stuff. We're going to talk about some things on offense and on defense that we would like to, that we feel they need to get better at. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syrup. We're back on the Rise Up Syrup podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. This isn't necessarily about personnel, where we're talking about the type of stuff they do on the field. What do we need to see them do better next year? Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. We didn't need to say that they need to run the ball better. Okay? They did fantastic at that. And I think that we obviously need better play from receivers. But if I could pick one thing to, you know, kind of nitpick at, if there's one thing that they could absolutely do better, their screen game needs to be better. The screen game in the NFL is as much as people hate it, it is one of the most important pieces to any offense, is to be able to be successful in the screen game.
It is, and it's very important that you're able to, you know, put your team in a position to kind of combat pass rush and things of that nature. And, you know, I wondered this, I think I said it on this show, you know, if a guy like Will Hernandez is just too big at this point to move well in the screen game. And obviously we saw the warts of the left side of the line in general. I mean, DJ was very solid, but he wasn't moving like he was previous, right? And things of that nature. So those are, I think those are fair and legitimate things. I think the other thing that they need to they need to work on. And I saw a really cool stat, and I wish I would have sent it to you so we had it to dive into a little more. But this is going to be like super inside baseball talk. But it's they need Kyler to play better against cover two defenses. I wish I would have sent that to you, man. But there was a guy that broke down every quarterback's EPA, and I'm not a huge EPA guy, but you know, I think if you just do it across the board, it gives you kind of an idea. And they broke down the EPA of every quarterback against every coverage, and Kyler's against cover two was really bad. And I expected his man stuff to be bad because they just didn't have the hosses, you know, to complete passes against man. But the cover two stuff means that they're not able to hit the hole shots on the sidelines, which kind of goes into what I said about not having the hosses. And so it goes to the, you know, probably losing DeAndre Hopkins, but also needing that big receiver threat outside that can win in those, you know, those 12 to 17 yard comeback and outs and things like that range, where Kyler's shown the ability to throw it. I don't have the historical data, but you know, he's shown the ability to throw it, but this year was definitely a weakness of his. And so I don't know if that's, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know if that's a guy like a T. Higgins or Michael Pittman Jr., you know, in free agency, but they need something that can win in those situations. Because when you see stats like that, where his worst performance is against this defense, what do you think other defenses are going to do? And you don't think other NFL teams know that. So that means he has to find a way to get better against that in order to really kind of up his play and help this offense get to the next level. Because like you said, overall, not a whole lot to hate or complain about, right?
Not a ton. I would say this is a receiver issue, is they must do better on inside routes. Their offense is, you know, it's kind of predicated on that. Like, you see West Coast offenses. This is a form of a West Coast offense. You need to be able to get the ball on inside type routes while people are moving. And so whether it's better route running with separation, better catching, just simply catching the ball, or better timing for between the Kyler and the receivers, I think those were missing a lot of times. And when they hit on them every once in a while, like the Greg Dortch touchdown, there was a couple of times when Rondale Moore had a play where he got shoestrung, but it was a shoestring away from a huge play. And I think that's really, if you look at the offensive side of the ball, those are really kind of the three things. You look at the screen game, you look at Kyler against cover two, and then you look at the receivers and the inside routes. Because I think when you go outside of the numbers, the sidelines, that Kyler was able to find some success when he was playing. Like, I'm not gonna even think about the Josh Dobb or the Clayton Tune games, and so, because those problems are relevant at this point.
Yeah. And then defensively, I mean, you look at it, I think the first thing is, and we know what it is, right? They got to, all right, well, there's a lot.
It's all up front, really.
Right. I was going to say they have to get a pass rush. I think that's the first thing, man. Like, even more than the running game, I think that'll begin to take care of itself a little more. But they have to get a pass rush. They have no, I mean, the last... What was it? You had the stat, but
one,
like,
sack in the last five games.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you're not.
And it wasn't a real sack. That one sack was.
Oh, that's right. It was sack.
It was just Gardeck. Fields running out of bounds at the line of scrimmage with Dennis Gardeck 3 yards away.
Right. It was the Kyler sack. We've yes. seen Kyler do it 100 times. Where you're like, Kyler, at that point, just throw the ball. Right. Like, just throw it 3 yards in front of you and out of bounds. Like, yes. What are we doing?
That was the only sack over the last five games. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and so, yeah, like, that's just what you look at, and actually, you have...
I think that might have been the only sack in the last six games.
Right. So even more so, like, you have to find a pass rush, man. It has to happen consistently. If it doesn't happen, then what happened this year is what's going to happen overall. Right. Like, there's not going to be, like, everything else stems from that. And we can have long conversations about the corners. We can have long conversations about, you know, the linebackers and their inability against the run. But the reality is, until you can generate a pass rush and force teams to have to run the ball, like, teams were literally just hanging out and throwing the ball down the field without.
And that's the thing, is that the corners, like, aside from Marco Wilson and his bust, like, Marco had bad, he was bad this year.
Yes.
You know, I can't really complain about how the corners played. I didn't think that the corners were bad. And I know part of that is scheme, is because schematically they like guys playing zone because they don't want to give up stuff over the top, and that's what Marco is doing. So I can't say that they need better corner play when I think like 85% of their problems of their corner play is the lack of a pass rush up front. And so obviously pass rush, number one, you need, whether it's from the edge or the interior, probably both, everywhere, they need a pass rush. But then they also, number two, need, they just have to be stronger up front. I think Kaiser White's play was fine, and fine to good. And they don't play a lot with two linebackers in space. They will do that on the basis.
I think they would want to if they could. I just don't think that they had the talent.
That could be. But I kind of look at some of it, because I was looking at some free agent linebackers. I think that five-man front is also kind of a trend.
Definitely. Especially when your strength is at safety, right?
Yeah.
And you can look at those guys and you can find guys that fit. And a guy like Kaiser is basically a hybrid. I mean, yes.
He used to be a defensive back. But he is much bigger. He has bulked up a bot.
Yeah. Well, haven't we all in our... As we
yeah. Too bad for us. It's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at it.
Gosh, up front, they need strong. They need backups. They need stars. They need depth guys, young guys, old guys. They need quality defensive tackles in the middle that can hold up at the point of attack. Simply put, even if they're not great attacking players, they at minimum need to hold up at the point of the attack.
Right. And I think that there's a lot of guys in free agency that can fill those roles. And there's a lot of guys on day two and three of the draft that can fill those roles. I think all of that is plausible, and you know, we'll see how it works out, but there is some choices.
And then outside of that, I think defensively they're pretty okay. I think they overall had a pretty good year tackling. They had a good they flew to the ball really well, especially early in the season. And so then it goes to special teams, and they had a really great season from Blake Gillikin. Aside from those two misses against Seattle, Matt Prater was fantastic.
I still think it was an inside job.
I mean, maybe. Maybe it was. But, you know, outside of that, I can you expect much more out of the return game? Because Greg Dortch wasn't bad.
No, and I don't think there's much more to give, though.
Yeah, it's really hard to find, like, you'll get, and the guys that are, and you'll notice it that since the days of the Devin Hesters, is that, like, your great returners aren't great return, like, they're not elite returners. They don't have great return seasons all the time. So you'll have like Keyshawn Nixon this year. Pay attention next year. See if he does the same thing. Because it probably won't. Like, this is like Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson is rookie year, and then what was Patrick Peterson as a returner after that? He was virtually nothing. Right. He would beeline the best diagonal angle from his catch point to the sideline pretty much after that. And so, like, you look at this team, as bad as they were, they're all, like, if we're looking at where they want them to improve, it's not that there's not a lot of areas. It just has to be really important areas. It happens to be really important areas, but it's not terrible, right? It seems like that's in all five of those elements that we mentioned, those are reasonable expectations for improvement this next year, right?
I would agree with that. I think that there's a lot of chances to get better immediately, and you know, it can always get worse. Like, that's one of the things that we know, but like, I just don't see any way that there's not improvement
It's really hard to be worse than they were.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really hard to be. And the thing is that even the smallest incremental increase in your organic pass rush and in your strength at the point of attack, just the smallest incremental improvement in both those areas will do wonders for this defense. That will take it from a terrible defense to below average.
And that would be fine.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, and kind of like if we go back to like the 2018, 2019. So when 2019, terrible, terrible defense. When that improved to not terrible with the offense finally clicking, that's when they started finding success. And that's how that was. And then in 2021, early on in the year, when that defense was then outperforming expectations, that's when that team was felt like it was Super Bowl bound. We're not going to expect that from next year, but incremental improvements. And whether that is in increased personnel, like better personnel as a pass rush, whether that's simply Zaven Collins becoming a better pass rusher, B.J. Ojulari have an extra year under, then, or they go out and get better horses, so to say, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's just kind of how you have to look at it, and we'll see how it turns out. But overall, I think they're trending in the right direction, and that's the biggest thing that we wanted to see heading out of last year and into this year.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition, episode 507 of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, of a Star of Cardinals Talk on the web. We'll be back in a couple of days as we look ahead to the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll talk some more Cardinals stuff. But we have an entire offseason of shows still coming up. We haven't broken down much yet. We'll get into positions and grades and needs and contracts. That's all coming up in the shows in the weeks to come. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back again in a couple days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.